北京外国语学院，北京外语音像出版社。
The Beijing Foreign Languages Audiovisual Publishing House. Beijing Foreign Studies University.
Oral Workshop. Argument. Read by David Grant
and Tess Thompson.
Oral Functions Bank.
1. How to agree strongly with an opinion.
I couldn't agree more.
That's absolutely true.
Absolutely.
I take your point.
I'd go along with you there.
I'm with you on that.
That's just what I was thinking.
That's exactly what I think.
That's a good point.
That's just how I see it.
That's exactly my opinion.
2. How to half agree with an opinion. Yes, perhaps.Well, yes. Yes, in a way. Possibly. Yes, I agree up to a point. Well, you've got a point there. There's something in that, I suppose. I guess you could be right. Yes, I suppose so.That's worth thinking about.
3. How to disagree politely with an opinion.
I'm not so sure, really.
Do you think so?
Well, it depends.
I'm not so certain.
Well, I don't know.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
I'm not really sure you're right.
I'm inclined to disagree with that.
No, I don't think so, really.
4. How to disagree strongly with an opinion. I disagree. I disagree with you entirely. I'm afraid I don't agree.I'm afraid you are wrong there. I really can't agree. I wouldn't accept that for 1 minute. You can't really mean that. I wouldn't go along with you there. You can't be serious. You must be joking.Note that you need to be very polite when disagreeing with someone in English, even someone you know quite well. With someone you know very well, you can disagree more directly.
5. How to present both sides of an argument. On the one hand, on the other hand,Although it's true to say that, it's also true to say that.
Lesson 1. Does television play a positive or negative role in the modern society? Text. Do the advantages of television outweigh the disadvantages?Television is now playing a very important part in our life. But television, like other things, has both advantages and disadvantages. Do the former outweigh the latter? In the first place, television is not only a convenient source of entertainment, but also a comparatively cheap one. For a family of four, for example, it is more convenient as well as cheaper to sit comfortably at home, with almost unlimited entertainment available, than to go out in search of amusement elsewhere. They do not have to pay for expensive seats at the theatre, the cinema, or the opera, only to discover, perhaps, that the show is disappointing. All they have to do is press a button, and they can see plays, films, operas, and shows of every kind, not to mention political discussions and the latest exciting football match. Some people, however, maintain that this is precisely where the danger lies. The television viewer takes no initiative. He makes no choice and exercises no judgment. He is completely passive and has everything presented to him without any effort on his part. Television, it is often said, keeps one informed about current events, allows one to follow the latest developments in science and politics, and offers an endless series of programs which are both instructive and entertaining. The most distant countries and the strangest customs are brought right into one sitting room. It could be argued that the radio performs this service just as well. But on television, everything is much more living, much more real. Yet here again, there is a danger. We get so used to looking at it, so dependent on its flickering pictures, that it begins to dominate our lives. There are many other arguments for and against television. The poor quality of its programs is often criticized, but it is undoubtedly a great comfort to many lonely elderly people. And does it corrupt or instruct our children? I think we must realize that television in itself is neither good nor bad. It is the uses to which it is put that determine its value to society.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. Why watch television?
Television is undoubtedly a great invention, but one of the main criticisms of it is that people just aren't selective enough. Leslie, you've got a television. How do you pick out the sorts of programs you want to watch?
I try and look at the programs that are on to decide which particular ones interest me, rather than you turning it on at 7 o'clock. And you leaving it on until 11:30 when the programs finish.
Do you think of television, though, as a great time waster?
I think it can be a time waster, and it depends on how particular people are about what they want to see. It can just be a sort of total amusement for someone, and totally consuming without really considering what it is they're watching.
Aha! But how do you prevent it coming into your life and taking over your evenings and at the same time perhaps get out of the television some of the sort of best things, best programs that undoubtedly are on television?
Well, I suppose one of the problems will depend on what a person's lifestyle is and that if he has other outside interests, which are equally important to him as television, he will then, you know, be more careful about which programs he wants to watch, because he has time which he wants to use for other things.
Do you think, though, that, in a sense, television has killed people's own, sort of creativity, or their ability to entertain themselves? Because if they're bored, all they do is just turn on the television.
Yes, I think that is a danger, and I think that, in fact, is what is happening to a lot of people who use it as their main, field of amusement, and because they don't have other outside interests, and even when people come round, they'll leave the television on and not be, you know, particularly interested in talking to them. You know, the television will be the main thing in the room.
Peter, have you got a television? I have. In fact, I've got two televisions. Do you watch them a lot? No, I watch very seldom. In fact, I find that I watch television most when I'm most busy, when I'm working hardest, and I need some sort of passive way of relaxing, something which requires nothing of me. Then I watch television a lot. When I've got more energy left, in my own private time, in my free time, then I find I do more different things. I do things like reading, or going out, or working on anything, my hobbies. Do you think, though, that people can live in a perfectly happy life if they haven't got a television? Oh, yes. I think people who don't have a television, or people who don't watch television, can be expected to be more happy. You can assume, I think, if they never watch television, they are happier people than the people who watch a lot of television, because I think that television goes with the kind of life which leaves you with nothing to spare, nothing left. You have to be given potted, passive entertainment. But in that case, you seem as though you're completely against television. Is that true? No, it's not. I have a television, in fact. I have two, as I said. But, I think there is a dilemma, a difficult situation. Television, in itself, is very good. A lot of the information and a lot of the programs are very instructive. They introduce you to things you may never have thought of before, or never have heard about before. But in watching, it makes you very passive. You sit for hour after hour, and you get very receptive, and very unquestioning, and it seems to me the important thing in life is to be active, to do things, to think things, and to be as creative as possible. And television prevents this.
2. Children and television. Housewife. What do I think of television? It keeps the family at home. The kids don't go out at night so much now. They come straight in from school, most of them. They run in and straight. Well, the television's on when they come in. I watch it myself during the afternoon. Well, it's company, really, and, then the kids come home, they eat their tea. I have no trouble with them eating their tea, because they just... Well, they don't even look at what they eat. They just sit down, and, they eat it, and they like the programs, and it keeps them quiet while I'm cooking the tea for their dad, when he comes home an hour later, and tea is ready when the news is on, when he comes in, and the news is on, or perhaps the football match or something. They have to be quiet then. They're not very interested in that themselves. They like the cartoons and things, but, I think television's great. We get on much better in the house now.
We've got things to talk about, you know, if I miss a program, if I'm cooking or something in the kitchen. I miss a bit of what's going on. I mean, I have the door open, so I can hear. But if I miss a bit, then they will tell me. And then perhaps later, or perhaps the next day, we'll have a chat about it, you know. It gives us something to talk about, really. I don't think it hurts the kids. I don't think it's a problem, you know, like, it stops them, makes their eyes go funny or something. I don't think it's a problem like that. I don't think it's a problem at all. They've learned a lot from television, I think. They're always piping up with questions, and learning a lot from the television.
3. Television is doing irreparable harm. Yes, but what did we used to do before there was television? How often we hear statements like this. Television hasn't been with us all that long, but we are already beginning to forget what the world was like without it. Before we admitted the one-eyed monster into our homes, we never found it difficult to occupy our spare time. We used to enjoy civilized pleasures. For instance, we used to have hobbies. We used to entertain our friends and be entertained by them. We used to go outside for our amusements to theaters, cinemas, restaurants, and sporting events. We even used to read books and listen to music and broadcast talks occasionally. All that belongs to the past. Now, all our free time is regulated by the goggle box. We rush home or gulp down our meals to be in time for this or that program. We have even given up sitting at table and having a leisurely evening meal, exchanging the news of the day. A sandwich and a glass of beer will do. Anything, providing it doesn't interfere with the program. The monster demands and obtains absolute silence and attention. If any member of the family dares to open his mouth during a program, he is quickly silenced. Whole generations are growing up addicted to the telly. Food is left uneaten, homework undone, and sleep is lost. The telly is a universal pacifier. It is now standard practice for mother to keep the children quiet by putting them in the living room and turning on the set. It doesn't matter that the children will watch rubbishy commercials or spectacles of sadism and violence, so long as they are quiet. There is a limit to the amount of creative talent available in the world. Every day, television consumes vast quantities of creative work. That is why most of the programs are so bad. It is impossible to keep pace with the demand and maintain high standards as well. When millions watch the same programs, the whole world becomes a village, and society is reduced to the conditions which obtain in pre-literate communities. We become utterly dependent on the two most primitive media of communication, pictures and the spoken word. Television encourages passive enjoyment. We become content with second-hand experiences. It is so easy to sit in our armchairs, watching others working. Little by little, television cuts us off from the real world. We get so lazy, we choose to spend a fine day in semi-darkness, glued to our sets, rather than go out into the world itself. Television may be a splendid medium of communication, but it prevents us from communicating with each other. We only become aware how totally irrelevant television is to real living when we spend a holiday by the sea or in the mountains far away from civilization. In quiet, natural surroundings, we quickly discover how little we miss the hypnotic tyranny of King Telly.
4. Television is good for people. TV may be a vital factor in holding a family together where there are, for example, economic problems, and husband and wife seem at breaking point. The dangerous influence is surely no more than what all of us are exposed to every day, in advertising, in the press. Primary and secondary education have improved out of all recognition since the arrival of TV in the home. And this is not only because of programs designed for schools. Through TV, a child can extend his knowledge, and it provides vital food for his imagination.
5. Television is to blame. TV passes on to children the corrupting values of a corrupt society. It's only a matter of time before we can give statistical evidence of how many criminals society has given birth to in front of the TV on Saturday night. You can blame TV for the fact that children take longer to learn to read these days and barely see the point anymore of acquiring the skill. In my opinion, watching TV should be strictly confined to treats.
Lesson 2. Are pets good for mankind? Text. Pets are good for you. The basic meaning of pet is an animal we keep for emotional rather than economic reasons. A pet animal is kept as a companion, and we all need companions to keep us feeling happy. But pets offer us more than mere companionship. They invite us to love and be loved. Many owners feel their pets understand them, for animals are quick to sense anger and sorrow. Often a cat or dog can comfort us at times when human words don't help. We feel loved, too, by the way pets depend on us for a home, for food and drink. Dogs especially look up to their owners, which makes them feel important and needed. A pet can be something different to each member of the family, another baby to the mother, a sister or brother to an only child, a grandchild to the elderly. But for all of us, pets provide pleasure and companionship. It has even been suggested that tiny pets should be sent as companions to astronauts on spaceships to help reduce the stress and loneliness of space flights. In this plastic age, when most of us live in large cities, pets are particularly important for children. A pet in the family keeps people in touch with the more natural animal world. Seeing an animal give birth brings understanding of the naturalness of childbirth, and seeing a pet die helps a child to cope with sorrow. Learning to care for a pet helps a child to grow up into a loving adult who feels responsible towards those dependent on him. Rightly, we teach children to be good to their pets. They should learn, too, that pets are good for us human beings.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. An unmatchable cat. I was sick that winter. It was inconvenient, because my big room was due to be whitewashed. I was put in the little room at the end of the house. The house, nearly but not quite on top of the hill, always seemed as if it might slide off into the cornfields below. This tiny room had a door, always open, and windows always open, in spite of the windy cold of a July, whose skies were an unending light clear blue. The sky full of sunshine, the fields sunlit, but cold, very cold. The cat, a bluish-grey Persian, arrived purring on my bed, and settled down to share my sickness, my food, my pillow, my sleep. When I woke in the mornings, my face turned to half-frozen sheets. The outside of the fur blanket on the bed was cold. The smell of fresh whitewash from next door was cold and clean. The wind, lifting and laying the dust, outside the door was cold. But in the curve of my arm, a light purring warmth, the cat, my friend. At the back of the house, a wooden tub was set into the earth, outside the bathroom, to catch the bath water. No pipes carrying water to taps on that farm. Water was fetched by ox-drawn cart when it was needed, from the well about 2 miles away. Through the months of the dry season, the only water for the garden was the dirty bath water. The cat fell into this tub when it was full of hot water. She screamed, was pulled out into a cold wind, washed in permanganate, for the tub was filthy and held leaves and dust, as well as soapy water, was dried and put into my bed to warm. But she grew burning hot with fever. She had pneumonia. We gave her what medicine we had in the house, but that was before antibiotics, and so she died. For a week she lay in my arm, purring, purring, in a rough, trembling little voice that became weaker, then was silent. Licked my hand, opened huge green eyes when I called her name, and begged her to live. Closed them, died, and was thrown into the deep old well, over 100 feet deep it was, which had gone dry because the underground water streams had changed their course 1 year. That was it, never again, and for years I matched cats in friends' houses, cats in shops, cats on farms, cats in the street, cats on walls, cats in memory, with that gentle, blue-grey purring creature, which for me was the cat. The cat, never to be replaced. And besides, for some years, my life did not include extras, unnecessaries, ornaments. Cats had no place in an existence, spent always moving from place to place, room to room. A cat needs a place as much as it needs a person to make its own. And so it was not until 25 years later my life had room for a cat.